This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts. This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Well, while Meta may be having a tough time in the aftermarket, Chipotle Mexican Grill in the aftermarket yesterday was soaring, and it soared in today's session, up more than 16% at its highs. And this is after the company reported second quarter earnings that topped analyst projections, the chain adding new locations. Consumers showed that they were willing to show up and pay more. The company also provided an upbeat sales outlook. So great to have back with us.
We got with us Brian Nichol. He is the CEO of Chipotle. It's good to have you with us, Brian. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us on this. Hey, Carol went through some of these. We also want to mention that same-store sales growing in the mid to high single digits in the third quarter. That's the outlook that you gave. What worked so well this past quarter as we're sort of getting a tale of two different earnings reports at this point? What worked so well for you guys?
Well, fortunately for us, our customer mix definitely over indexes with higher income. And we saw that group actually increase their purchase frequency with us. And their spend was also a little bit up. So What we concluded is we've seen some trade down, and people are switching some occasions into Chipotle. So we feel like we're gaining market share for our company. And then at the same token, we did see a slight slowdown with the lower income consumer from a purchase frequency standpoint, but not in their absolute spend. And, the thing that was really powerful for us throughout the quarter is our restaurants were staffed, and our team members did a great job of servicing both our digital business, which is roughly 40%, and our frontline business, which is really accelerating as people kind of come back to normal routines. And that was really the thing that I think carried us through the quarter. And then obviously our brand has tremendous value. And as a result, we were able to pass through some pricing to offset a lot of the inflationary pressures we've been dealing with.
Brian, I got to ask you, when you saw these results coming in or leading up to this earnings report, were you just kind of blown away? Even restaurant margin, which we all watch so closely because it's key in terms of measuring profitability, 25.2% in the quarter compared with an estimate of 25%. Yep. As the numbers were coming in, and were you just kind of blown away by the outperformance considering the declines we've seen in consumer sentiment and so much recessionary talk?
Yeah, look, I really think it goes back to the strength of both our teams that are executing in our restaurants. Because, they're the ones that turn the top line into the bottom line based on how they perform in the restaurant. And then I think the strength of brand, which is, it's really based on great culinary, great ingredients, customization and convenience. And I think we did a great job of executing against all those markers. And as a result, we were rewarded with people's business that then our teams did a great job of executing so that it flowed to the bottom line. But yeah, I'm really proud of the results. You know, to achieve a 10% comp and also be able to, you know, deliver the margins at the restaurant in this environment, I think it speaks a testament to just the value proposition, the strength of the brand, and the strength of the people working in our restaurants.
And while analysts in the investment community were pretty happy about what they heard, you know, in terms of your comp sales, I just want to mention another headline crossing about another company, Best Buy, talking about their second quarter comp sales, and they're talking about them declining about 13%. So a different company, but this stock is now down about 5% in the after hours.
Hey, Brian, back to Chipotle. Let's talk about wages, because I know that we heard from you guys last night that labor costs for the quarter were increased about 30 basis points from last year, 24.8%. Yeah. You did that, you know, wage raise last year, that sort of widespread wage increase. Are you going to have to do that again?
You know, we are continuing to see pockets of, you know, needs to do still movement on our wages. The good news for us is we took a really big move about a year ago, which you mentioned. And then really what we've been doing is just monitoring kind of at the local level, what's happening with wages and opportunity at our company so that we can attract, retain the right people. And we still are dealing with, I say, pockets of challenges on that front.
Where are those geographical pockets?
Yeah, and it's almost, look, it's like store by store. You know, it's not contained to one region over another region. It really depends on what I would call kind of the market area. And, you know, there's a lot of dynamics that go into it. You know, is there big box retail nearby? What are the other alternatives for kind of the employee pool that we compete with?
So while you raised wages pretty much across the board last year, Brian, not necessarily you will have to do the same thing this year, or you might have to.
No, we're still moving forward with merit increases, and we did a little bit bigger merit increase than usual given the inflationary environment, because we don't want to fall behind on wages either, given, you know, the environment we're dealing with. So that's really important to us. So I should probably caveat, we're trying to run our wage program on more of a, you know, system basis, where it happens every 6 months. We reevaluate wages. You know, we pass along merit increases, and also we provide promotions for folks. And, you know, before we were having to come in between those because, you know, you just, the competition to get labor to work had really increased dramatically because there were fewer people applying. Luckily, that seems to have gone to more of a normal pace, where applicant flow, as well as our ability to then retain people, is starting to get more, I would say, to a normal approach for us, or normal run rate.
I got to ask you, only because it's been another story that we've been following for the last few months about unionization that we're seeing, certainly among, you know, restaurants. How do you guys feel about that? Or is that part of your move to make sure you stay ahead of when it comes to higher wages? Because would you prefer that your restaurants don't become unionized, or are you okay about it?
Yeah, look, I really don't see the need for a union at Chipotle. You know, I believe our jobs and the culture and the opportunities are best done within our restaurants and within our company. We don't need a third party to be a part of that conversation. And the reason why I say that is we've got great wages. Okay. They're great jobs. We're a growth company. You have the ability to join our company with, you know, a high school degree or some equivalent. Mm-hmm. And also, if you talk to any like new immigrants or refugees, I mean, this company delivers jobs that deliver the American dream. And I can share many stories where, you know, I was just with somebody that was a refugee from the Congo. He's now one of our highest level general managers, making six figures, leading a multi-million dollar restaurant, a team of 30 plus people. And the guy is electric. And you know what? He's going to be able to continue to grow with us.
Yeah,
there's a young woman. She immigrated from Chihuahua, Mexico, single female, didn't know English, learns English. You know, 9 years later, she's our top restaurant general manager in the entire company.
That's impressive.
So, yeah, there's just tremendous opportunity for people to go from a crew position, work their way up to being a general manager, becoming what we call a restaurateur, which is our top general managers, becoming a multi-unit leader. Right. And when you're building 300 plus restaurants a year, there is so much suction for people to get promoted and moved up. I think last year we promoted, you know, like 19,000 people.
Wow.
So just tremendous opportunity. And, you know, I'm very proud of our company and I'm very proud of the jobs that we provide to our people.
Hey, Brian, a lot of those still out of your control, especially when it comes to costs. And this is something that we heard Fed Chair Jay Powell talking about, the rising costs across the board, especially for food. We did learn last night in your earnings report that you mentioned avocados, dairy, tortillas, some packaging. Those prices are still going up. You did, though, say that other parts of the business you've seen prices plateau. What is that? Where has inflation been transitory in your business?
Well, yeah, don't mistake that for transitory because it hasn't gone backwards, right? So
you're not ready to call peak inflation?
I'm not ready to call peak inflation yet.
Okay.
I wish I could, but I'm not ready to say that because we haven't seen anything really go backwards yet.
Yeah.
The good news is we finally had, like, I don't know if you can call this a trend, but we had like a month or two where we didn't see everything going up. But as you mentioned, we had some major inputs going up still and in a meaningful way. And that's why, you know, unfortunately, we got to take another price increase in August. As much as I hate to do it, we're fortunate that our brand has the pricing power to do it, and we can maintain the integrity of our value proposition.
Was it what ingredients are you referring to? Was it chicken? Was it steak? What was it?
That plateaued or continued to put
pressure? That plateaued.
It was more in the proteins, so like pork, beef, and some produce items. Unfortunately, packaging, aluminum, dairy, tortillas, avocados, chicken, wow, continue to have a lot of pressure.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, Brian, I mean, you're continuing to grow in terms of the number of restaurants and especially the pickup windows. You know, where is the real growth and momentum that you guys continue to see? I've been out to visit. It's really pretty cool to see the different lines that you guys are able to tap into, and certainly the digital world of people just either ordering online and just zipping by and picking up. So where is it that you really continue to see growth in terms of the types of restaurants you want to be opening up?
Yeah, look, the restaurant, the Chipotle format, is, you know, a traditional Chipotle with a pickup window where you don't have to get out of your car. Mm-hmm. And those restaurants, we now have 430 of them. Mm-hmm. And I think the last time we spoke, or maybe the first time we spoke about this, I think when we were talking about it, we had like 10. And this was back in like 2019. So it just shows That's the amazing. Power of our development. But they continue to really perform. You know, our digital business is about 15% bigger in that execution. And then the total business is also opens at a higher volume as well. So that's 80% of what we're building. We just opened our first one up in Canada to a really successful opening. And then just recently we opened one in kind of a smaller town outside of California. It was like a new record opening for us. So it's got a lot of momentum. We'll continue to build the inline Chipotles as well, where we can't get the Chipotle, but it's clear consumers like the additional access point and not having to get out of their car. And it really is the fastest drive-through experience you can have because you've ordered ahead, you've already paid for it. If you order a fountain drink, that's the thing that you got to wait on. Otherwise, you pull up, say your name, and you know, you got a burrito and you're ready to go.
Hey, Brian, about a year ago, we were interviewing you and I asked you about Chipotle accepting crypto. And I got to be honest, you kind of laughed it off. And here we are a year later. And, you know, June of this year, you announced that you now accept crypto at U.S. locations. It's partnership with Flexa. So essentially people load up this app with their crypto and then you accept that app at the restaurants. How's that going right now? What percentage of sales is in crypto at this point?
It's a really neat tool that Flexa provides so that people can monetize their crypto. But, you know, they carry all the risk. And it's a very, very small percentage of sales. Arguably, it's almost negligible. But, mm-hmm. You know, for those that have it and want to monetize it, we found, a pretty clever solution.
All right. But you are doing the buy the dip game, right? And if you win,
you could get a bunch of crypto. We got a lot of creative people in our marketing department. I'll tell you that much.
Well, but why do a promotion and tie it? Even Dogecoin is in there. Like, so no. But it is interesting. Is it just kind of it appeals to your audience? And, you know, what is it?
Yeah. You know, look, we have a commitment to stay relevant, both in culture, food culture, you know, music, you know, I guess tech falls all the way to this idea of crypto. And I think the team does a fabulous job of staying on the front end of where young people want to be. And then also being very relevant. You know, I never want our brand to be out of sync with the conversation. And, you know, look, The reality is the things that drive culture, right? It's food, it's fashion, it's sports, it's music.
Right.
I think it's tech. So we want to be present in those things.
Well, I love that you said tech, because we had a great conversation with your chief technology officer last week, Kurt Garner, and we talked about the Cultivate Next Venture Fund. You guys are investing in companies like Hyphen, and we were actually kind of blown away. We were online, Tim and I, looking at it, this make line of where you've got teams in the restaurant servicing customers, and then yet below, all the digital orders are being filled. I mean, when you think about the investments you want to be making in other companies, how do you think about it? What's the strategy there?
Well, yeah, look, I'm super excited about this Hyphen possibility for exactly what you just described, right? We've got, think of it this way, right? 40% of our business is on that digital make line. If we could automate that aspect of our business, mm-hmm. where you know you only need a person or two to manage it, it makes the job a lot easier at Chipotle for our employees, because now you're not having really balanced deployment between digital orders and frontline orders. And at the same token, you know, in the event it goes down, you still can serve off the top of the line. So that Hyphen technology, automation, robotics, whatever term you want to give it, is, I think, a big opportunity for us. I'm super excited about our investment. I've met the guys that are working on it, or I should say the team that's working on it up in San Jose. Smart group of people. I never thought I could say I would have a bunch of rocket scientists working on Chipotle. I got a bunch of rocket scientists working on Chipotle, which is pretty amazing.
There's technology in every walk of our life, that's for sure. Hey, Brian, fun to spend some time with you. Brian Nickel, of course, the chairman and CEO at Chipotle, joining us via Zoom from the company's headquarters in Newport Beach, California. Brian, be well.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Thank you.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So we know during the pandemic that a broader clientele was boarding private jets, especially as business travel came to a halt. And we've got a great guest to give us kind of an update as how the private jet industry continues to evolve as we increasingly come out of the pandemic, but we're not done yet.
Yeah, we are certainly not done. A good reminder that we are still in it, right? The president just testing negative today. Andrew Collins is president and CEO of Sentinet Jet. He's with us right now in the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. Andrew, it's been a while since we've seen you. It's good to have you back with us. How are you?
I'm doing great, and it's great to be back here in the studio.
Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, give us, I want to talk about sustainability and what you guys are doing there, because there's some really cool stuff. But first, I want to get an idea of what you're seeing as you look across the landscape right now. And to Carol's point, we saw private jet travel demand really shoot higher during the pandemic as people, thought that this was a good way to keep them safe. Are you seeing that demand remain strong right now?
We are. So we saw the addressable market expand per se, right? A lot of hidden people, hidden customers that, really took a pandemic to bring them out. They might have been a little fiscally conservative, or they might have thought about the sustainability issue. But at the end of the day, they came out. And products like ours, we invented the jet card, so you pre-buy 25 hours at a time. When you utilize a service like that, you tend to get used to it. And so I don't think all the new entrants that came in and the expanded, amount of and the velocity by which, the volume came, I don't know that that will remain exactly as it stands, but a good portion of it is we're very busy this summer. Despite, raising rates and fuel surcharges and everything else, there is a voracious appetite for flying and traveling right now.
Are you back to pre-pandemic levels?
We are well past pre-pandemic levels.
Really?
Yeah.
And is most of it leisure, or is it a combination of leisure and business.
Little tricky because it feels like leisure.
Or what do they call it now? What is the hybrid?
Bleisure.
I think it's a lot like that. Yeah,
like I go on a business trip and I bring my husband.
100%. Yeah. I think that, you know, it used to be, I could tell you, it was 60% corporate and it was 40% leisure, et cetera. Now it's very much hard to track because it's a lot of individuals, a lot of individual flying. They might be just expensing it. You have no idea in some cases. You'd have to look at kind of time of day and
what
where
do you mean
traveling.
You don't know? But, I mean, a corporate credit card goes through, right? Doesn't it?
Like, because when you with our card, you actually deposit money and then we just debit it down. So we'll never really know if you're using it for business or not unless you did set it up as a business account.
Okay. Right.
Because
somebody pays for it, right?
Somebody does pay for it, yeah. And and a lot of times it's a primary customer and it's in their name. So at the end of the day, though, you can tell. Like, you can tell certain routes and you can see things come back. Teterboro's come back a lot. Westchester's come back.
Right.
You know, Van Nuys has come back. So there's a lot of business travel out there that's almost sneaky, but it's definitely happening.
It's interesting. We're seeing this reversion to the mean with a lot of these pandemic plays out there in the public markets, whether it's Shopify laying off 10%, 1,000 people earlier this week, Peloton coming back from sky-high valuations. Do you anticipate a reversion to the mean as we do ease out of the pandemic and you get back to pre-pandemic levels, which were significantly lower than they are now? People become more comfortable on commercial travel?
Well, I think that commercial's got a long way to go. And that's, you know, without disrespect to my commercial brethren, but...
Oh, you can disrespect. We've had to do a bunch of commercial flying.
We spent a lot of time disrespecting.
It's been a bummer.
It's tough, right?
It is tough.
You know, the reaction up front was to shrink a lot of routes and shut a lot of things down. To bring that back is really tough. So they're in the process of trying to figure that out. But there's a lot of people that left the airline industry and they're not coming back, or pilots and crews retired. So there's a lot of challenges there. Over in Europe, it's even worse. So right now, you're seeing private jets 15% year-over-year growth due to the fact that it's just very difficult to travel throughout Europe. And I don't know that I see a lot of return yet. It just doesn't feel like that. It feels like in the fall and in the winter, especially this peak period, we're gearing up for a very big peak period during the winter.
Do you have all the workers that you need or that you want? But you're paying up for them big time.
You have to be very aggressive. Yeah. So we've done a lot of aggressive work. We've done a lot of recruiting. We've hired a lot of recruiting
aggressive
people.
Aggressive means you're paying them more.
We're paying them more and we're talking to a lot more people. You know, it takes a lot more to fill one slot. So we're doing a lot. We're also doing
things. But not everybody can be a pilot.
No, not everybody can be a pilot. And so there's a lot of work that goes around being a pilot. But to get crews, for instance, you have to pay more. No question.
Hey, Andrew, I want to touch on the sustainability efforts.
Sure.
You mentioned people who have been previously concerned about the environmental impact of perhaps traveling private might not have the same concerns now. It does emit a lot of CO2. I mean, we're talking tons and tons per single plane per hour, literal tons. What are you doing to offset that and to make customers feel better about their environmental impact?
So you have a lot of different choices. You can do nothing and people will still pay and come on and fly. You can do a simple carbon offset, or, you know, a lot of people will offer access to a carbon offset service or something like that. We actually don't charge our customers, and we do 300% offsetting. So we invest millions of dollars in the background to do emissions offsetting. So we go a little bit further. We go into the water vapors, the aerosols, the nitrous oxides, the things that actually make the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that we probably are doing one of the largest sustainability efforts in private aviation. And so we do it with a partner, but it's not an additional cost to our customer, and every flight is offset 300%. So in the first half of the year, we probably did the equivalent, if I was to compare it to things. It's the equivalent of planting 5 million trees or providing energy to your average, you know, town in America for a full year. It's a lot, and we're just getting used to it, and we're just learning it, and we're just experimenting with things, but we're trying to push our industry to do a lot more.
I agree. Push away. I love carbon offsetting. What about carbon negative efforts, where we're actually reducing the carbon in the atmosphere, which many would argue that that's what we need to do to save this planet?
I think that you've got to look at a lot of things. You've got to look at sustainable aviation fuel. I think you've got to look at a lot of ways to, you know, one of the offshoots of the pandemic that's great is that it's virtual. So you're not doing a lot around the office as much and things like that. So we're looking at a lot of different ways to handle sustainability. I would tell you, though, the biggest push that can happen is in electric and what they're calling eVTOLs. And, you know, as a company, we have 200 eVTOLs on order for
Europe and
North America.
When do you get those?
I hope, knock on wood, in 4 to 5 years.
Wow. What's the company that you've ordered from?
Eve.
Okay.
But is it eventually your whole fleet? Just got about 20 seconds.
I don't know. It could be. It's definitely a mass transit play, but it's definitely on the horizon.
But you're feeling the pressure to do that too, right?
No, I think we're ahead of the curve, to be honest with you.
Love it. Love it. So glad you went there and so glad you're working on that. Andrew, great to have you in studio.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Andrew Collins. Appreciate he's president it. And CEO of Sentient Gent, joining us here in our Interactive Brokers.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Radio.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Hey, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, we've got just about... just under 11, 12 minutes in the trading day. It's been a big day. It's a Fed day. You heard Charlie break it down. We've got stocks just hovering off their best levels of the session. So we've seen quite a rally. It looks like investors reading what we got from the Fed is kind of dovish signals. We'll see if whether or not the analysis is truly that. We did see yields back down a bit.
And we'll see what happens tomorrow and, you know, Friday.
The day after is often very different.
Plus, we get so much economic data later this week.
It's a good point.
Let's get into it with Randy Watts, who's chief investment strategist at O'Neill Global Advisors. Randy joining us on the phone from Miami. Randy, how are you?
Hey, it's great to hear both your voices, and I hope you're well, and I hope we can do this in person at some point this fall.
Fingers crossed.
Hey, let's go to Miami, Carol.
It will come your way.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good, especially when it starts to get cool up here. Hey, Randy, just give us your immediate reaction to what we just heard from Fed Chair Jay Powell. I know you watch the technicals here, but give us your read on what he had to say.
I think what happened today was exactly down the middle of the fairway. It was very anticipated. You got the rate increase that the market expected. Market had expected a 74% chance of a 75 basis point increase today. You got that. And if anything, I would say the press conference was slightly more dovish in that Powell made it very clear the Fed's going to be data dependent going forward. But he also sort of reemphasized the 3.4% rate for Fed funds for the end of the year. So I would say exactly as the market expected, no surprises, slightly more dovish press conference. And that's one of the reasons equities have reacted so strongly. And I would note bonds have rallied as well. The curve has flattened somewhat with the 10-year coming down with the 2-year coming down a bit. So really as expected.
Yeah, and I think also, Carol, it seems like that investors are pretty happy that Jay Powell said that we're not currently in a recession right now. I mean, reporters tried really hard to get that question out of him. Neil Irwin over at Axios finally did.
Right.
And we saw stocks move higher after that.
And he reminded everybody, hey, wait, that's not my responsibility. It's all about my dual mandate.
It seems like there's a single mandate right now, and that's inflation.
Well, exactly. I have to say, Randy, when he said that, wait a minute, we could also, start to think about slowing in terms of our rate moves, I thought to me that that's very significant. But I think you were spot on. Bill Dudley, formerly of the New York Fed, the same thing. Jay Powell reminded us several times through that press conference. He came back to that June dot plot, which shows, a commitment by the Fed to continuing on its tightening path. And I think that needs to be something that investors kind of just remember that he said that.
If I could add one more thing,
sure.
I'd say the other sort of important points are he did say that he's seeing slowing demand in Q2. They did say that they're going to try to stick to the balance sheet drawdown that they're currently on, and that they were aiming for a soft landing, but that's very hard to achieve, and that they think it's necessary to slow growth. So, I mean, the Fed is definitely still in a tightening cycle, but again, at the margin, slightly more dovish than I think what people most feared from that press conference.
All right. So as investors then, like, help me out here, because you know I'm kind of tired of all of the speculation. We've hit bottom. We've not hit bottom. I mean, if you are investing in this market, you got to figure out how to put money to work. Should you be putting money in the equity universe? Should you be playing it safer in fixed income? How do you see it?
Okay, let me say two things. First, I think the minute the stock market can identify or see, we don't have to be there, but can see the end of the Fed tightening cycle, I think stocks are headed up a lot higher. Now, it's unclear we're there yet, but as soon as the market starts to sense that, I think equities are going to really take off. In terms of where we are right now, a typical bear market rally is up about 12%. That's kind of where we are right now. And so what happens going forward is going to be very interesting. We really want to see the S&P hold above its 50-day moving average. Right now, it's about 3% above that. It's about 8% away from the 200-day. If it can stay above that 50-day, we're pretty optimistic. However, if it was to pull back and break that 50-day, you would then expect a technical retest down to those June lows around 36.36.
Mm. Right.
I think what's been most surprising so far for investors is that earnings season has been better than expected. It's been better than people's worst fears. We've had about 36% of the S&P report so far. 74% have beaten. So that is, I think, better than what people were worried about. I will note, though, that forward estimates for 2022 and 2023 are coming down.
Mm-hmm.
So the out-year numbers are being reduced, but they're still showing growth. And I think, and you look at the reaction on stocks like Microsoft and Google today, you can see the relief that earnings are not really collapsing.
Totally agree. We get two big readings on both Apple and Amazon tomorrow. And speaking of Apple, just crossing the Bloomberg terminal, Apple has enlisted one of Lamborghini's top car development managers in a sign that it is stepping up work on a self-driving electric vehicle. This is according to people with knowledge of the situation. Luigi Tarabarelli, he's a 20-year veteran of the Italian car maker, so he's going to help lead the design of Apple's future vehicle, according to those in the know. So, folks, if you didn't know it, the EV race, it is on.
Yeah, don't expect to hear anything on tomorrow's earnings call about this. Apple has certainly kept it under wraps. Hey, Randy, I want to get back to the Fed and what happens if
sure.
we don't see inflation come down. Because we got two months until the next Fed meeting. We're off in August. And, they go to Jackson Hole, and we'll hear a bit. But at the same time, we're not going to get a policy decision for 2 months.
That's true. Obviously, inflation is still running very hot. The CPI was 9.1 in June year to year. And Powell made a point of calling out PCE as the Fed's most watched measure. That was 6.3% in June, the largest in 40 years. So I do think we have to start seeing these inflation numbers move in the right direction. They don't have to go immediately to where the Fed wants them, but they've got to stop going up and maybe start to go down a little bit at the margin. I'm hopeful that last month was the peak inflation month. We have seen a little bit of a decline in both food commodities and in energy prices recently. That should translate to a less hot number in July and hopefully August. But you're right, and he was very clear in the press conference, if the numbers come in hot in July and August, you could be looking at another 75 basis points in September.
Right.
The market would not like that. That's what could set up a move back towards that 36.36 low. But I'm optimistic that's not going to happen. We're going to see a little bit of an improvement, and the market can keep grinding its way higher as long as there's no surprises.
Yeah, those inflationary pressures, it's something we're going to be putting to the Chipotle CEO, Brian Nickel, whether or not, I'm trying to get an idea. We do hear some easing in some of those inflationary pressures, but what he is seeing, because they have certainly seen wages go up at that company, and whether or not they continue to see it. So, Randy, where don't you want to be in this market right now?
I think that's a tricky question. I think where I want to be is really looking to pick up secular growth stocks where I feel very good about their prospects long term, and I'm not trying to really play a strong economy scenario. I do think the economy is weakening. I would say one thing we should focus on is housing. Mm. Obviously, the pending home sales numbers were very bad. New home sales are bad. Housing is about 18% of the U.S. economy, so it's got a big impact across the whole spectrum. And so I don't think I want to be playing for a strong economy right now. What I really want to do is just pick up growth stocks that have pulled back dramatically, because when this tightening cycle ends, you're going to get a PE expansion on those names, and I think you're going to be very happy you own them in 2023.
Interesting. So you mean like an Apple and Amazon? Is that what you're talking about, a Microsoft? Is that what you mean?
I mean, I do think, you know, a stock like Google, for example, has a little bit of an easier story right now than Amazon, where they're slowing consumer spending. With regards to Apple, I think a lot of that has to do with China. They get a lot of their sales in China, and I think there's a question of how have those sales been, given the lockdowns we've seen in some of the major cities over there. Obviously, longer term, we really like it.
Right.
But I would probably try to be looking for companies where the story was a little bit easier, a little bit less controversial, where maybe the numbers have come down slightly, but it's been more of a valuation pullback.
Right.
Obviously, valuations were stretched. But when you look at the market right now, it's trading about 15 times the 2023 estimate of 264.
Right.
So I think this is a good time for long-term investors to start to accumulate stocks.
Yeah.
And again, once we get to the end of this rate cycle, I think equities are going a lot higher.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff. And it's interesting what you said about housing. Diane Swonk earlier on TV, she's over at KPMG. She's the chief economist. She said, housing is the canary in the coal mine. It's not singing anymore. Randy Watts, so great. Chief investment strategist at O'Neill Global Advisors.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.